is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. The Supreme Court's ruling on former President Trump's claims of absolute presidential immunity from prosecutions expected tomorrow, says ABC's Perry Russum.
This does not have to be a yes or no ruling from the high court. There could be some type of hybrid ruling offering a president some level of protection. The trial for this case was supposed to start back in March. It was then delayed as it went up to the high court. So depending on what the ruling is tomorrow, this case could move forward and we could see a trial before November.
President Biden's given no indication he plans to step down from the Democratic nomination for president. He attended fundraiser Saturday, 2 days after his shaky debate performance. Hurricane Beryl continues to strengthen, now a Category 3 storm as it heads towards the southeastern Caribbean. And holiday travel continues to surge in the U.S. On Friday, the TSA screened the fourth most people in one day on record. It's expected to screen 32 million through next Monday. This is ABC News.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Visit any Wisconsin farmers market and chances are you'll find Hmong vendors. Mike Moan reports on efforts to attract new and younger Hmong Americans to agriculture.
Wisconsin has the third largest Hmong population in the U.S., that according to UW data. Only 2% are officially employed in agriculture, but researchers suspect that number is underreported. Yimua Yang of the Groundswell Conservancy senses a changing of the guard with older Hmong producers nearing retirement. Some of their adult children express interest in taking over, but she adds their mindset is different than their parents.
Older Hmong farmers, farming is therapeutic for them. They're making a little bit of money, but also farming and gardening makes them happy. The difference is that these younger farmers, they want farming to be financially sustainable.
Yang says land access is a major challenge for emerging Hmong farmers, and her group is working with partners like the Michael Fields Agricultural Institute to create funding solutions to address this problem. Yang would also like to see policy adjustments dealing with how long a farmer can rent land. And there's a new federal program helping with land access, but Yang says more support is needed. She feels giving younger Hmong farmers peace of mind might inspire them to further explore what they grow and sell.
Unlike Minnesota and the Twin Cities, where there's a big concentration of Hmong consumers, in Wisconsin, the Hmong community is sort of scattered throughout the state.
That means these farmers have to focus more on marketing mainstream fruits and vegetables to non-Hmong customers. But Yang suggests if groups like hers get more bandwidth, the next generation of Hmong producers will be in a better position to grow culturally specific food. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection.
This is Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
The Brewers lose to the Cubs. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers losing before a sellout at American Family Field, nearly half of them Cubs fans, as Chicago pulled off a 5-3 victory Saturday. The Cubs jumped out to an early lead with a single, then a two-run homer by Chicago's Michael Busch on just the first two pitches of the game. Brewers starter Tobias Myers.
I think a lot of it's just baseball. They were aggressive today. They know what I've been doing the last couple weeks is attacking with the four-seam, so I think they did a pretty good job of coming out and putting some good swings on some fastballs.
The crew battled back to a 3-3 tie until reliever Yoel Piamps gave up a walk and a home run to Ian Happ in the eighth. Brewers manager Pat Murphy.
You're in the major leagues and you're pitching at that time in the game. Walks are not a possibility. I mean, it's just not part of it. If you look at our pitching staff, a lot of our success, and it's been great this year, of not giving up free bases. The home run is the home run.
That's Pat Murphy. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
This is your hometown radio, Refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. We'll see tons of sunshine for your Sunday and light north winds as highs top out in the lower 70s. In the overnight, clear skies, light winds will continue with lows in the lower 50s. On Monday, mostly sunny with highs in the lower to middle 70s.
Right now, it's 58.
Hey Wisconsin, it's construction season and the Wisconsin DOT wants to help you safely navigate work zones in your area.
Check 511WI.gov or download the free 511 app to see current road work, closures, detours, and camera views on your route. Wherever your travels take you, know before you go with 511WI.gov. That's 511WI.gov. And remember, know before you go. Always park the phone while driving. Sponsored by the Wisconsin DOT.
Look up cheese curds. You'll find this basic definition. Wet pieces of curdled milk.
Huh?
Well, it should also include the word delicious. As we continue to celebrate June Dairy Month, do you know how much milk is needed to make 1 pound of cheese curds? 16 ounces, 64 ounces, or 160 ounces, 10 pounds of milk? The answer coming up.
It actually is a sound of freshness.
Rachel Kerr is talking about squeaky curds. She's with the Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin and a bit of a cheese nerd.
Those elastic protein strands rub against the enamel of your teeth and create that characteristic sound.
The squeak turns stretchy when battered and deep fried. Some believe the idea to fry globs of cheese happened by accident. I consider it a happy accident. Okay, did you guess? It takes 10 pounds of milk, which is a big gallon jug plus a little bit more, to make 1 pound of squeaky cheese curds. Call me your curd girl for this slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Earl Ingram.
On the next show, it's Motown Monday, and I'll be joined by South Carolina Congressman Jim Clyburn. We'll discuss some of the issues that are impacting you and I every day.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 till 10.
Errands. It only takes a few minutes for their body temperatures to rise, and that could be fatal.
Cars get hot fast and can be deadly. Never leave a child in a car. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council. Ad Council. Ad Council. Ad Council. Ad Council.
The music of the stars. Something from Vincent Price. He wrote a great album. Put it together, narrated it. Nobody better, I think. Here's Vincent Price of St. Louis, Missouri, with a story about Mr. Paul Revere. The music of the stars. Happy Independence Day holiday.
The pilgrims had good reason to celebrate Thanksgiving. The land, though untamed, was rich and bountiful. Other shiploads of eager settlers followed. The colonies grew swiftly, and men learned to breathe deeply the infectious air of freedom. The infection spread until in 1775 it became a disease called independence, and Americans found that they were more willing to die of it than live without it. This is the spirit which prompted Longfellow's immortal poem, Paul Revere's Ride.
This was recorded 1961.
Listen, my children, and you shall hear of the midnight ride of Paul Revere on the 18th of April in 75. Hardly a man is now alive who remembers that famous day and year. He said to his friend, "If the British march by land or sea from the town tonight, hang a lantern aloft in the belfry arch of the North Church Tower as a signal light. One, if by land, and two, if by sea. And I, on the opposite shore, will be ready to ride and spread the alarm through every Middlesex village and farm for the country folk to be up and to arm." Then he said, "Good night," and with muffled oar silently rowed to the Charlestown shore, just as the moon rose over the bay where swinging wide at her moorings lay the Somerset, British man of war. A phantom ship with each mast and spar across the moon like a prison bar, and a huge black hulk that was magnified by its own reflection in the tide. Meanwhile, his friend through alley and street wanders and watches with eager ears, till in the silence around him he hears the muster of men at the barrack door, the sound of arms and the tramp of feet, and the measured tread of the grenadiers marching down to their boats on the shore. Then he climbed the tower of the old North Church by the wooden stairs with stealthy tread to the belfry chamber overhead and startled the pigeons from their perch on the somber rafters that round him made masses and moving shapes of shade. By the trembling ladder, steep and tall, to the highest window in the wall, where he paused to listen and look down a moment on the roofs of the town and the moonlight flowing over all. Beneath in the churchyard lay the dead in their night encampment on the hill, wrapped in silence so deep and still that he could hear, like a sentinel's tread, the watchful night wind as it went creeping along from tent to tent and seeming to whisper, "All is well." A moment only he feels the spell of the place and the hour and the secret dread of the lonely belfry and the dead. For suddenly all his thoughts are bent on a shadowy something far away where the river widens to meet the bay, a line of black that bends and floats on the rising tide like a bridge of boats. Meanwhile, impatient to mount and ride, booted and spurred, with a heavy stride on the opposite shore walked Paul Revere. Now he patted his horse's side, now gazed at the landscape far and near, then impetuous stamped the earth and turned and tightened his saddle girth. But mostly, he watched with eager search the belfry tower of the old North Church as it rose above the graves on the hill, lonely and spectral and somber and still. And lo, as he looks on the belfry's height, a glimmer, and then a gleam of light. He springs to the saddle, the bridle he turns, but lingers and gazes till full on his sight a second lamp in the belfry burns. A hurry of hooves in a village street, a shape in the moonlight, a bulk in the dark, and beneath from the pebbles in passing, a spark struck out by a steed flying fearless and fleet. That was all. And yet, through the gloom and the light, the fate of a nation was riding that night, and the spark struck out by that steed in his flight kindled the land into flame with its heat. He has left the village and mounted the steep, and beneath him, tranquil and broad and deep, is the mystic meeting the ocean tides. And under the alders that skirt its edge, now soft on the sand, now loud on the ledge, is heard the tramp of his steed as he rides. It was 12 by the village clock when he crossed the bridge into Medford town. He heard the crowing of the cock and the barking of the farmer's dog and felt the damp of the river fog that rises after the sun goes down. It was 1 by the village clock when he galloped into Lexington. He saw the gilded weathercock swim in the moonlight as he passed and the meeting house windows, blank and bare, gaze at him with a spectral glare, as if they already stood aghast at the bloody work they would look upon. It was 2 by the village clock when he came to the bridge in Concord town. He heard the bleating of the flock and the twitter of birds among the trees and felt the breath of the morning breeze blowing over the meadows brown. And 1 was safe and asleep in his bed, who at the bridge would be first to fall, who that day would be lying dead, pierced by a British musket ball. You know the rest. In the books you have read how the British regulars fired and fled, how the farmers gave them ball for ball from behind each fence and farmyard wall, chasing the redcoats down the lane, then crossing the fields to emerge again under the trees at the turn of the road, and only pausing to fire and load. So through the night rode Paul Revere. And so through the night went his cry of alarm to every Middlesex village and farm, a cry of defiance and not of fear, a voice in the darkness, a knock at the door, and a word that shall echo forevermore. For born on the night wind of the past, through all our history, to the last, in the hour of darkness and peril and need, the people will waken and listen to hear the hurrying hoofbeats of that steed and the midnight message of Paul Revere.
Thank you. give way to open hostility. And history records that fateful year and the midnight ride of Paul Revere.
All right, there's a signal. Get on the horse, Levine.
That's Revere.
Revere, Levine, just so you ride a horse good. Now get going.
All right.
To arms! The British are coming! The British are coming!
Hey! Who's that making all that racket out there?
It's me, Paul Revere.
Who?
Revere!
I got all the pots and pans I need, sweetie.
But what about the British?
As far as I know, they got all the pots and pans they need, too.
Dear Mom, dear Mom,
Soldier Boy to His Mother, these words by Alan Foster.
Dear Mom, the weather today was cloudy and damp. Your package arrived but was missing a stamp. Your cake made a hit with all the boys in the camp. How they love it. And Mom, the food is okay, don't worry your head. I sleep pretty well, but I miss my old bed. And oh, how I wish they'd make this army co-ed. Still I love it. If you should run into a certain you know who, please do this for me. Give her a kiss for me. Tell her to write me nightly, dear Mom. That's all for tonight. The bugle just blew. Tomorrow's a big day with plenty to do. I like it here, but I'm kinda homesick for you, for I love you. Dear Mom.
Seen old Rivers. I can't remember when he wandered around. Well, that old fella did a heap of work. Spent his whole life walking plowed ground. He had a one-room shack not far from us, and well, we was about as poor as him. He had one old mule he called Midnight, and I trailed along after them. He used to plow them rows straight and deep, and I'd come along there behind, busting up clods with my own bare feet. Old Rivers was a friend of mine. The sun'd get high and that mule would work, and old Rivers would finally say, whoa. He'd wipe his brow and lean back in the reins and place he's gonna go. Say, one of these days, up there among them clouds where the cotton's high and the corn's a-growing and there ain't no fields to plow. I got a letter today from the folks back home and they're all fine, crops is dry. Down near them in, Mom said, son, you know old rivers die. They're sitting here now in this new plowed earth, trying to find me a little shade. With the sun beating down across the fields I see, that mule, old rivers, and me. Now one of these days, I'm gonna climb that mountain, walk up there, among them clouds where the cotton's high and the corn's a-growing and there ain't no fields to plow. With the sun beating down across the fields I see, that mule, old rivers, and me.
The music of the stars.
Patriotism gone. Some seem to think our patriotic days are dead. We used to sing of our homeland with passion, but now we seem to shy away from it instead.
This is a great country, a great country. So let's shout it clear and loud. Take a look in your history book and you'll see why we should be proud. Hats off to America, the home of the free and the brave. If this is flag waving, flag waving, do you know of a better flag to wave?
This is a great country, a great country, so let's shout it clear and
America, the home of the free and the brave. If this is flag waving, flag waving, do you know of a better flag to wave? Impossible.
The forge of liberty was soon to flame again. Our young nation, still in swaddling clothes, asking only to be left at peace, was given a baptism of fire in the War of 1812. An American attorney and poet, Francis Scott Key, was detained by the British fleet while it bombarded Fort McHenry through a long night. The fort had withstood fantastic punishment. Surely dawn would reveal surrender. What Key saw and felt at dawn, he set down in a magnificent poem, which was to become the words of our national anthem. Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming? Whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight o'er the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming? And the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. Oh, say, does that star-spangled banner yet wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave? On the shore, dimly seen through the mists of the deep, where the foe's haughty host in dread silence reposes, what is that which the breeze or the towering steep, as it fitfully blows, half conceals, half discloses? Now it catches the gleam of the morning's first beam, in full glory reflected, now shines on the stream. 'Tis the star-spangled banner. Oh, long may it wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave. And where is that band who so vauntingly swore that the havoc of war and the battle's confusion, a home and a country, should leave us no more? Their blood has washed out their foul footsteps' pollution. No refuge could save the hireling and slave from the terror of flight or the gloom of the grave. And the star-spangled banner in triumph doth wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave. Oh, thus be it ever when free men shall stand between their loved homes and the war's desolation, blessed with victory and peace. May the heaven-rescued land praise the power that hath made and preserved us a nation. Then conquer we must when our cause it is just. And this be our motto: in God is our trust. And the star-spangled banner in triumph doth wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave.
The flag, son. Read what's written there. The history, the progress, the heritage we share. Our flag reflects the past, son, but stands for so much more. And in this age of Aquarius, it still flies in the fore. It leads the forward movement shared by all mankind to learn, to love, to live with peace of mind. Learn the mysteries of space as well as those of Earth. To love each man for what he is, regardless of his birth. To live without the fear of reprisal for belief. To ease the tensions of a world that cries out for relief.
Raise the flag of stars and bars, of red and white and
face the flag, son. Take a good long look. What you're seeing now can't be found in a history book. It's the present, the future, son. It's being written now. And you're the one to write it. The flag can show you how. Do you know what it stands for? What its makers meant? To think, to speak, the privilege of dissent. think our leaders might be wrong to stand and tell them so. These are the things that other men under other flags will never know. But responsibility, that's the cross that free men must bear. If you don't accept that, freedom isn't there. Face the flag, son, and face reality. Our strength and our freedoms are based in unity. The flag is but a symbol, son, of the world's greatest nation. As long as it keeps flying, there's cause for celebration. So do what you gotta do, but always keep in mind. A lot of people believe in peace, but there are the other kind. If we want to keep these freedoms, we may have to fight again, God forbid. But if we do, let's always fight to win. The fate of a loser is futile, it's bare. No love, no peace, just misery and despair. Face the flag, son, and thank God it's still there.
Good morning, everybody. It's Lou Vergani, WLIP. Happy Independence Day. Right here from WRJN. Make an appointment to stick around on Saturday. Terry Havel has got his Rock and Roll Never Forget show Saturdays from 10 till 2. We have Rick Johnson, the stories behind the hits, the stars, some songs you may have forgotten. You'll hear him here on WRJN. Entertaining and, yes, educational. Saturdays, WRJN, the music of the stars now, right here, coast to coast and worldwide, civicmedia.us. Independence Day.
It was a time for action and a time for words. On a hot July night in 1776, Benjamin Franklin was aroused from his work by the call of destiny.
Hey, in there, Ben?
Who's that, Sylvia?
It's the call of destiny.
Come on, take a look through the curtains there.
It's Tom Jefferson.
What, again? Well, it's no good. I'll have to let him in. I'm coming.
Hi, Ben.
Tom?
You got a minute?
Well, I tell you the truth, we were just going out of town for the weekend.
But it's only Wednesday.
Yeah. Well, you know, a penny saved is a penny earned.
What does that got to do with anything, Franklin?
I don't know. It's the first thing came into my head. I was just making conversation. An idle brain is the devil's playground, you know?
So you're pretty good at that, aren't you?
Yeah, there's some new wise sayings that you made up.
Wise sayings?
Yeah, I call them wise sayings.
Mm-hmm.
What can I do for you?
Well, I got this petition here I've been circulating around the neighborhood. Uh-huh. Kind of thought you'd like to sign it. It's called the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah, I heard about that. Sounds a little suspect, if you ask me.
What do you mean, suspect?
Well, you're advocating the overthrow of the British government by force and violence, aren't you?
Well, yeah, but we've had it with that royal jazz.
Who's we?
Well, all the guys.
Who's all the guys?
Oh, George, Jim Madison, Alex Hamilton, Johnny Adams, you know, all the guys.
The lunatic fringe.
Oh, they are not.
Bunch of wild-eyed radicals. Professional liberals, don't kid me.
Oh, you call George Washington a wild-eyed radical?
Washington? I don't see his name on there.
No, but he promised to sign it.
Oh, yeah, that's George for you. Talks up a storm with them wooden teeth. Can't shut him off. When it comes time to put the name on the old parchment of Rooney, try and find him.
Hey, what are you so surly about today?
Surly to bed and surly to rise.
Oh, all right, let's knock off the one-line jokes and sign the petition. What do you say, huh, fella?
Well, let me skim down it here. When in the course of human events, so-and-so, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
That's pursuit of happiness.
Well, all your S's look like F's here.
No, it's stylish.
Oh, I see.
It's in. It's very in.
Oh, well, if it's in. We therefore, the representatives of the United States of America, so-and-so-and-so-and-so, solemnly publish and declare that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British crown, and so on. A little overboard, isn't it?
Oh, well,
you write this?
Yeah, I knocked it out. It's just a first draft, you know.
Well, I tell you, why don't you leave it with me and I'll mail it in, huh?
Oh, come on.
Oh, I tell you, Tom, let me say this. I'm with you in spirit. I'm sure you understand that, but, you know, I got to play it conservative. I'm a businessman.
Yeah.
I got the printing business going pretty good. Almanac made Book of the Month. And then I got the inventions, you know. Got pretty good distribution on the stoves now. And, of course, every Saturday evening, I bring out the mag.
The what?
Magazine.
Oh. Well, that reminds me, that artist I sent by, did you look at his stuff?
You mean the Rockwell boy? Skinny kid with the pipe?
Yeah, that's a kid.
Yeah, I glanced at it, and he's too far out for me.
Oh, yeah. Well, I know you got to play it safe.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But getting back to the signing of the petition, how about it, huh?
Well,
it's a harmless paper.
Oh, sure, harmless. I know how these things happen. You go to a couple of harmless parties, sign a harmless petition, and forget all about it. 10 years later, you get hauled up before a committee. No, thank you. I'm not going to spend the rest of my life writing in Europe.
Oh, come on.
Come on what?
Come on and put your name on the dotted line.
I got to be particular what I sign.
It's just a piece of paper.
Just a piece of paper, that's what you say.
Come on and put your signature on the list.
It looks to have a very subversive twist.
How silly to assume it. Won't you nom de plume it today? You're so skittish. Who possibly could care if you do?
The Un-British Activities Committee, that's who.
Let's have a little drinko and fill the quill.
It sounds a little pinko to me, but still.
Knock off the timid manner if you want a banner to raise.
Banner to raise.
You must take,
I must take
a stand,
a stand
for this brave new land,
new land.
For who wants to live,
to live.
So conserve,
so concerned, but if I don't dis,
he don't disagree,
agree.
But a man can't be too careful what he signs these days.
Well, if I sign it, will you renew your subscription?
Yeah, if you promise not to keep throwing it on the roof.
Well, my...
If it isn't on the roof, it's in the rose bushes or in the mud.
My eyesight isn't what it used to be, you know. Besides, it's hard to hit the porch from a horse.
Now, come on. All we want to do is hold a few truths to be self-evident.
You sure it's not going to start a revolution or anything?
Trust me.
Okay, give it to me. You got a quill on you?
Here you are.
Look at this show-off Hancock, will you? Pretty flamboyant signature for an insurance man.
Ah, you did a good thing, Ben. You won't be sorry. Now, if I can just get another 3 or 4 guys, we'll be all set.
Well, I tell you one thing.
What's that?
You better get them to sign it in the next couple of days before they all take off for the 4th of July weekend.
We'll be right back.
music of the stars. That's the Houston Symphony Orchestra. Johnny Carson.
Thank you. That's right. Happy birthday. To us. To everybody. Everybody's birthday today, right?
Country. Right.
199 years old and... Are you in the fireworks display later tonight?
I just want you to think of me as your own personal Roman candle.
Good evening. I'm Johnny Carson. I'm going to bring you a safe and sane fourth tonight, because the monologue is a dud. Reason I'm here tonight, actually, I wasn't going to be here, but my favorite campsite was filled up. Have you been out on the roads at all? You can't move, I understand, out at the beaches. Did you go anyplace today?
No, this is it for me. I mean, I'm celebrating right here, as I often do.
Tom, how about you?
How about what?
It's those toughies that throw it. Tommy, he loves fireworks. What Tommy does every 4th of July, he lights a Crayola and yells, bang. Incidentally, you know, fire department regulations, we thought we should have something to celebrate the 4th tonight, but fire department regulations say we cannot have on stage a display of live fireworks. But don't despair. We have a skyrocket under each of your seats. We'll be fired off sometime during the show tonight. Well, this is a nice day today. Beautiful weather out here in California. And this is the kind of year, time of year, that Americans kind of set aside their differences and join in a calm celebration. Even in New York City, where they're celebrating the bicentennial, the sanitation workers have agreed to pick up the garbage every 200 years. Did you do anything to celebrate the 4th of July today? You go out on a picnic or go to the beach or anything like that, Tom?
No, but I'll weigh that.
He's rolling tonight. No, everybody has their own way of celebrating the 4th of July. For instance, the oil companies are going to celebrate by sending the price of gas skyrocketing. You think back 1776, what great men of wisdom we had then? Jefferson, Washington, Franklin, and today, oh, why spoil the celebration? Somehow I can't get those famous words.
John.
What?
We got you.
Your brother.
I didn't know your brother was coming to the show.
Dick follows me every place. No, but remember what was that famous saying? These are the times that try men's souls.
That's the one.
Remember that?
Yep.
It's easy to remember. It was said last week by Mayor Beam in New York. These are the times. You know, we still have Minutemen, though, today, who spring into action every time somebody wants to pass a gun law. It was just a little social comment, and I should have left that out. Did you know? Don't try to do, social comment humor. Did you know one of my ancestors was John Quincy Carson?
Really?
Yes. Now, the reason you don't see his name on the Declaration of Independence, because that particular day, he had a guest founding father sign in for him. That's why you don't see it there. Burbank had its annual fireworks display today. It wasn't a biggie. What happens in Burbank at 9 o'clock, the mayor stands on a chair and turns on his key ring flashlight. That's about it. Now, really, the spirit of 76 has affected everybody, even Vice President Rockefeller. He celebrated Independence Day. He freed Venezuela today. That's what he did. A lot of different people celebrate the holiday differently. One well-known show business couple has kind of an unusual way. Johnny Mann's wife, in honor of the 4th of July, hangs her husband out the window.
This is pretty safe and sane, all right.
It isn't, though. See, I'll skyrocket in a moment. Did you read this in the paper? Where are you going? Stay here. Did you see this in the paper? They had a flood. Where do you think they had a flood?
Las Vegas.
They don't know it's the 4th of July, but they know that they had a flash. They had a flash flood up in Las Vegas, and 100 cars were washed away. They had 2.5 inches of rain in something like 2 or 3 hours, and which is incredible up there. But Las Vegas never stops. They had rowboat junkets to the gambling. One little old lady was desperate. They could not get her away from the nickel slot machine. She just stood there during the flood, bailing things out with her Dixie cup. Anyway, good night.
Any eve of the 4th of July. I, Paul Harvey, do herewith bequeath unto you something to remember. You may not be able to quote one line from the Declaration of Independence at this moment. Henceforth, you'll always be able to quote at least one line. It's in the last paragraph where you will recall when I remind you, it says, "We mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor." In the Pennsylvania State House that's now called Independence Hall in Philadelphia, the best men from each of the colonies sat down together. This was a very fortunate hour in our nation's history, one of those rare occasions in the lives of men when we had greatness to spare. These were men of means, well-educated, 24 were lawyers and jurists, 9 were farmers, owners of large plantations. On June 11, a committee sat down to draw up a Declaration of Independence. We were going to tell the British fatherland no more rule by redcoats. Below the dam of ruthless foreign rule, the stream of freedom was running shallow and muddy. And we were going to light a fuse to dynamite that dam. This pact, as Burke later put it, was a partnership between the living and the dead and the yet unborn. There was no bigotry. There was no demagoguery in this group. All had shared hardship. Jefferson finished a draft of the document in 17 days. Congress adopted it in July, and so much is familiar history. But now, King George III had denounced all rebels in America as traitors. Punishment for treason was hanging. The names now so familiar to you from the several signatures on that Declaration of Independence, the names were kept secret for 6 months, for each knew the full meaning of that magnificent last paragraph in which his signature pledged his life, his fortune, and his sacred honor. 56 men placed their names beneath that pledge. 56 men knew when they signed that they were risking everything. They knew if they won this fight, the best they could expect would be years of hardship in a struggling nation. And if they lost, they'd face a hangman's rope. But they signed the pledge. And here is the documented fate of that gallant 56. Carter Braxton of Virginia, wealthy planter, trader, saw his ships swept from the seas. To pay his debt, he lost his home and all of his properties and died in rags. Thomas Lynch Jr., who signed that pledge, was a third-generation rice grower, aristocrat, large plantation owner. After he signed, his health failed. His wife and he set out for France to regain his failing health. Their ship never got to France, was never heard from again. Thomas McKean of Delaware was so harassed by the enemy that he was forced to move his family 5 times in 5 months. He served in Congress without pay, his family in poverty and in hiding. Vandals looted the properties of Ellery and Clymer and Hall and Gwinnett and Walton and Hayward and Rutledge and Middleton. Thomas Nelson, Jr. of Virginia, raised $2 million on his own signature to provision our allies, the French fleet. After the war, he personally paid back the loans, wiped out his entire estate, and he was never reimbursed by his government. In the final battle for Yorktown, he, Nelson, urged General Washington to fire on his, Nelson's, own home, which was occupied by Cornwallis. It was destroyed. Thomas Nelson, Jr. had pledged his life, his fortune, and his sacred honor. The Hessians seized the home of Francis Hopkinson of New Jersey. Francis Lewis had his home and everything destroyed, his wife imprisoned. She died within a few months. Richard Stockton, who signed that declaration, was captured, mistreated, his health broken to the extent that he died at 51. His estate was pillaged. Thomas Hayward Jr. was captured when Charleston fell. John Hart was driven from his wife's bedside while she was dying. Their 13 children fled in all directions for their lives. His fields and grist mill were laid waste. For more than a year, he lived in forests and caves and returned home after the war to find his wife dead, his children gone, his properties gone. And he died a few weeks later of exhaustion and a broken heart. Lewis Morris saw his land destroyed, his family scattered. Philip Livingston died within a few months from the hardships of the war. John Hancock, history remembers best due to a quirk of fate rather than anything he stood for, that great sweeping signature attesting to his vanity, towers over the others, one of the wealthiest men in New England. And yet he stood outside Boston one terrible night of the war, and he said, "Burn Boston, though it makes John Hancock a beggar, if the public good requires it." So he, too, lived up to the pledge. Of the 56, few were long to survive. 5 were captured by the British and tortured before they died. 12 had their homes from Rhode Island to Charleston sacked, looted, occupied by the enemy, or burned. 2 lost their sons in the army. 1 had 2 sons captured. 9 of the 56 died in the war from its hardships or from its more merciful bullet. I don't know what impression you had of the men who met that summer in Philadelphia, but I think it's important that we remember this about them. They were not poor men. They were not wild-eyed pirates. These were men of means. They were rich men, most of them, and had enjoyed much ease and luxury in their personal living. Not hungry men, certainly not terrorists, not irresponsible malcontents, not fanatical incendiaries. These men were prosperous men, wealthy landowners. They were substantially secure in their prosperity. They had everything to lose. But they considered liberty, and this is as much as I shall say of it, they learned that liberty is so much more important than security, that they pledged their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor. And they
fulfilled their pledge. They paid the price. And freedom was born.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
This is the music of the stars. I'm Lou Regani. Good morning. I'll be right back.
Soaring high above La Crosse, this is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse. And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.